There's a lot of really cool, sexy, emerging technology, AIs that are able to adopt human emotions and have a conversation with you where you don't know you're talking to an AI. But at the state level, at the government level, we have to look at, you know, what is the practical, the meaningful application.
Go public.
The state of state CIOs on AI, paying ransom, fifth generation networks, and the question of legacy this election year. All in a tidy 15-minute package. It's all hand-forged with human intelligence as we go public.
From government technology and governing, this is Go Public, stories of government getting it done.
Hello there, I'm Paul Taylor.
I'm Noelle Nell.
And I'm Lauren Harrison.
Welcome, welcome. Glad you're here. Both of you were recently in Baltimore for the national mid-year gathering of state tech leaders, where there was no small amount of change on the docket in the thinking about whether to pay ransom, the prospects for emerging technologies, and in the ranks of the state CIOs themselves, all as they anticipate the fall election that puts up to 36 states in play. Now, most recently, we learned that the acting Washington State CIO, Rob St. John, is hanging it up after a 33-year career as a utility player in the public sector IT community in Olympia. So, Noelle, we now add Rob to a growing list of veteran hands who are bowing out of the arena.
It was a little bittersweet. Some of these folks that have been serving in those roles for so many years might be the last time we see them. So people like Stu Davis in Ohio, Craig Orgeron in Mississippi, and many others. So a little bittersweet, but some encouraging news about some of the new folks coming in, a couple of which we got to talk to.
Yeah, you know, we first talked to Charles Grindle, is new in Kentucky since December.
Fascinating guy. Almost 30 years in the Army and now running tech for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So talk to him about a lot of issues on his mind. It'd be interesting to catch up as he gets a little deeper into it. And then also was great to meet someone even newer on the job, and that's Nevada CIO Michael Dietrich, fresh out of the private sector, as so many state CIOs are, but most recently with Ericsson and LinkedIn. He had some interesting things to say, just in terms of getting back into the public sector.
You know, he'd been in the position for 3 or 4 weeks. And so to just immediately off the bat be at NASIO with all these people who have really been in the role and know what it takes and what it means to be a state CIO. So yeah, here's what he had to say.
It's really beneficial to me. I believe that, you know, I bring a lot of knowledge to the position, but I also have to bring some humility because I don't know how government works. It's my first foray into that, and I really want to make intelligent decisions, and the conversations I've had at this conference have been so valuable. So very, very glad that I attended, and that's really the strategy and style that I'm going to carry forth is, you know, a kind of a learning servant mentality.
That learning servant mentality was interesting and refreshing in that, you know, he of course admitted, I've been here a few weeks. I know what I don't know, but I'm eager to learn. So it'll be great to get to know him and some of his incoming colleagues over the next few months. And then turning to the issues that were on CIOs' minds, we had a number that we wanted to check in with them about, and one that was really timely was ransomware. Of course, cybersecurity always appears on everyone's priority list, and ransomware has hit a number of jurisdictions recently, Atlanta, of course. But first of all, just to kind of get on the same page with it, what do we mean when we're talking about ransomware?
You know, and when I try to wrap my head around things like this, I try to think of it in the simplest terms possible. So ransomware just boils down to, you know, a bad actor comes in, infiltrates your system, locks down your data, and wants some money for it. And you can pay the money and theoretically get your data back, or you can rely on backups. And we asked these CIOs we talked to, you know, if an agency in your state has a ransomware attack and comes to you and asks what they should do, you know, what would you tell them? What would be your best practices, or what are policies you have in place?
Yeah, I was surprised. First of all, we'll get to their advice, which was great, but how many of them were very forthcoming with the fact that these attacks are fast and furious all the time? One CIO talked about the fact that they had 120 successful attacks 2 years ago, one last year, and then had implemented some practices that to protect them, and kind of a knock on wood situation, no attacks so far in 2018. So they had a number of pieces of advice, and one that was kind of interesting was around whether you pay. It used to be, don't ever pay the ransom, but there were some different opinions on that.
I think we only had one or two people who really said, don't pay the ransom, like number one, don't pay the ransom. But what I thought was really interesting was Dewan Neely from Indiana. He was the only one who really talked about, what if you choose to pay the ransom? What are the implications of that? Does that, you know, guarantee that you're going to get your data back? Are you trusting your hackers? And I thought it was really nice to have that different take on it.
Yeah, that was an interesting perspective. And also it kind of makes sense, especially when you think about the Atlanta hack that's been in the headlines for the last several weeks. The ransomware was demanding $51,000 in Bitcoin, and they've now almost spent $3 million in remediation. So 8 emergency contracts they put into place in order to respond to ransomware. You know, at least you have to talk about that. If it is as simple as just paying the ransom and getting on with it, then maybe that's something for consideration. Any other advice that CIOs offered?
There was a lot of focus on, you know, being proactive, really planning ahead. The attack, so often in cybersecurity, we hear it's not if, but when. So this ransomware is all wrapped up in that as well. So be proactive, you know, have a plan in place so that when you get attacked, you know, your workforce is trained. They know not to click the links. That's going to prevent an attack. And then also what they're going to do when the attack happens. There's also some good advice about having your partnerships with the private sector in place so that you're not scrambling to get contracts done and push RFPs through when you're already under the gun and you're already, your data is locked down and you need a plan.
One thing that was helpful for me is the breakdown of exactly what happened in Atlanta, because so often we would hear, as long as you have your backup in place, you're fine. There's no reason you would need to pay a ransom. But it's much more sophisticated than that. And Todd Kimbriel, CIO of Texas, was really helpful in breaking that down.
I think the thing about ransomware in particular is really alarming, which is the tactics that threat vector presented to Colorado and to Atlanta, and that they got a toehold through a vulnerability that they were able to expose. And then they went out and interrogated the environment to find where the backups were stored to delete the backups. And then they dropped the ransomware payload and then triggered it simultaneously from a variety of locations. And that takes what, you know, has traditionally been a very straightforward threat and makes it a very evolved and complex threat, and one that's very difficult to respond against if you haven't prepared for that threat vector.
As we like to do, we also hit up our state CIOs at NASIO about emerging tech and wanted to get a sense of what it was that was on their minds as they gathered with their peers and what new technology are they excited about? And this was the don't call it blockchain question.
Yeah, our way of getting around blockchain was to ask what they think is the next blockchain, so to speak. What's going to be the next big thing everyone's talking about? And that got a few chuckles because, you know, the answers that we got were really all across the map. There was everything from blockchain is still the next blockchain to, you know, what we found was that a lot of states were still talking about AI, artificial intelligence, as the thing, the next new technology they're going to be using in their state. Because as much as there are front runners out there who are doing really great things with AI and machine learning within their governments, there's states who are just getting on board with that.
That was eye-opening for me. Like you said, our coverage tends to focus on the leaders that are out there pioneering, and everyone else is watching to see what might apply. And now there are enough of those use cases in place where they can really see how they might be able to use it as well. So here's Michael Dietrich again from Nevada talking about the potential for AI in the state.
That's an interesting question. I come from a background of working in high tech, private sector. There's a lot of really cool, sexy, emerging technology. And, you know, when I think of things like that, I think of like AIs and AIs that are able to adopt human emotions and have a conversation with you where you don't know you're talking to an AI. And that's all really cool stuff. But at the state level, at the government level, we have to look at, you know, what is the practical, the meaningful application for these emerging technologies. And that's a good example. For instance, if an artificial intelligence is able to learn and make decisions and have those capabilities, it would be a great thing for cybersecurity, for an AI to actually be looking at patterns on the network, to be looking at traffic and be able to make human-like decisions of, oh, this is something that's malicious.
So Dietrich mentioned cybersecurity. A lot of CIOs talk about the potential for AI to help with the influx of attacks coming in to the network and trying to analyze some of that and help government get a handle on it. And then there's other possible ways that AI could help as well. Stephanie Dedman, a deputy CIO in Tennessee, was talking about some of the things she's thinking about as far as AI use goes.
We're beginning to work with our Medicaid agency to, in the area of Medicaid eligibility, to determine if there are tools and techniques we can use. We really feel like the sky is probably the limit, but we have to start slow, start small with something that makes sense. We're really beginning to do early research and understand what's on the market and what the opportunities might be.
NASIO had a panel on artificial intelligence as well. We talked about the fact that we cover a lot of what the leaders are up to. Gartner Research had it pegged that about 20% of governments are in the early stages of using AI now, either using it now or they plan to use it in the short term. And then as far as leaders go, of course, we've mentioned Utah. They've got a number of skills for the Amazon Alexa, as do a number of other governments. In addition to using AI for large-scale sentiment analysis, they're also using it for an air quality analysis project where during their winter inversions, which brings high pollution, they're looking at a number of data sources, including social media and the regular ones you would expect, the air quality monitors and so forth, to look at the impacts of those events on a broader scale. And AI is enabling that.
And I think for me, one of the big takeaways from all the AI talk that we had there was that they can't all be Utahs. Not everyone can be first. And but definitely, like, no one thinks AI is a bad idea in government. No one thinks it doesn't have practical use cases, but it's finding out what those use cases are, what makes sense for each state that's practical and cost effective in terms of just where they are in their tech development.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of progress from a few years ago where we would ask folks about cognitive computing and AI and just get a lot of wide eyes in return.
Yeah, now everyone wants to talk about it.
Yes. And of course, Google delighted developers at its recent conference by having an AI actually make a hair appointment.
I'll have something out for you.
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure, give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real use that some of us could benefit from.
Did the AI conversation lead to any privacy discussion, particularly in light of some of the troubles the commercial players have been having lately?
Not a lot of privacy worries expressed by CIOs. In fact, Mike Hussey of Utah did talk about the fact that Big Brother fear was very real, but AI use is becoming a little bit more accepted, I think, driven by what's going on in the consumer market.
Still on the emerging tech track, we asked all the CIOs we talked to what they see as the potential for 5G in their state. And we got a whole range of responses. A lot of them were pretty gun-shy, really didn't want to talk about it. There's a lot of political implications around there with the relationship with telcos and all that. You know, I think like AI, they all think the potential for it is great. There's nothing wrong with trying to get more coverage in your state, but if you are a state that already has a lot of pockets of rural areas that currently don't have broadband, it's hard to then talk about the potential for 5G.
Yeah, that definitely seemed a few years off for most. They were excited by the potential of 5G, but really had more immediate concerns in front of them, like you said, with rural connectivity. I believe it was Kentucky that talked about the fact that they have about 80% penetration now for broadband. So that's kind of first on their plate. But then they also mentioned the possibility of maybe skipping over broadband and going right to 5G if it's that much simpler to deploy. You know, maybe they can see their way to make that happen and get rural folks connected more quickly.
Hello. Was there any discussion around legacy, or do either of you have any thoughts on the legacy of the those that are leaving the arena here in 2018 or shortly after the election?
Well, one of the points that I thought was really interesting from one of the sessions was people were asked to indicate which quality was most important for a CIO. And traditionally, or maybe when the role of CIO first began, it was that technologist. You want somebody who can answer all the questions that nobody else understands. But far and away, the most important quality at this conference was a communicator. Communication skills are so important, bridging the gap between technology and business. And you talk about the class of folks that are probably on their way out with their current governors, and they all just are very effective at communicating the benefits of technology, at connecting what they're doing to the mission of the organization, you know, really that citizen-centric viewpoint, and not just, you know, we're going to have the best data center in all 50 states. So thanks for joining us for some of our top-of-mind insights from NASIO Midyear. We're looking forward to staying in the West Coast in October for the annual conference in San Diego. With Lauren Harrison, I'm Noelle Nell, and this is Go Public.
And that will do it for us this time around. Next time, Innovation Chief Dustin Heiser will be here to introduce us to the founder of DigiCities, who is putting more human smarts into smart cities, and an agile government champion who pulls back the curtain on the subversively helpful way of government getting it done. That's what we do here, too. Until next time, thanks for listening.
We're just getting started. Let's keep the conversation going. Tweet us at GoPublicPod and subscribe to Go Public on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And you know there's always more at govtech.com and governing.com.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.